Further citizen comments? All right, seeing none, we'll close that. And I have no reports. Are there any committee members who have something to report about?
We want to talk about paperless this time?
We could do that. Anybody else before we do that? No? All right, April?
As you all know, I've sent out an email. I think you've all gotten it, asking you to sign up for our new electronic agenda. All you need to do is click on the link that's in that email, and it'll bring up a little screen where you type in your email address and just confirm that you're signing up for it. And then once you do that, you'll be able to access it when I publish it each month. And what it looks like is up on the screen here. For each of the items, you'll see the item and then the backup information that goes along with that item. You click on it one time with the left and it'll bring up the resolution or whatever document it is, and you can scroll through it and read it that way. And then get out of that, you just click out of it with the X. And if any of you want a special session or you want to call me, I can walk you through it over the telephone too while we both look at the screen. If you're not real confident in using the electronic agenda system, I'm willing to get you into it and help you out. But the main thing is to answer those emails that I sent out so that we get you signed up so that you have access to it. It's also on the website. You can look at it on the website too by just going to the website.
Did you send the email to the youth too?
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I know one of them signed up already. Was it you, Daniel?
Did you get mine back that I wanted paper?
Yes, I did. And then you still have the option.
I did that. I'm not sure yet. Okay.
Sure, that's fine. That's it. Until everybody gets used
right.
to it, no problem.
What I want to know, of course, Wesley, what I want to know, when we come to the meetings, you're going to have it, here, right?
I can. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because if we yeah. do that, then yeah. I don't need the paper in front of me. But if we're going to have it,
yeah.
that I got to print the whole thing myself or
right.
something, then it's useless.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, as
so
long
if,
as
the
system is
if we're going to have
the
committee
working.
Meeting and you're going to have the agenda like that, and you're going to click each item as we go through and put it up there, and I'm okay with it.
Sure.
Okay.
That's great.
So then would you have to, like, bring your own, like, he's brought, like, a tablet?
You can bring your own tablet and call it up on that, too. Right. That's what the planning committee does at the planning meetings.
Right.
Each one of the supervisors brings their iPad or whatever it is, tablet that they have.
But right. if you're going to put it up here.
But I'll also put it up
yeah.
on here.
So then what do we need iPad for?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Good point.
Yep.
Huh?
But this way it gives everyone out there to the agenda.
Because I was concerned that I'd have to bring the iPad every time, and as long as you're going to put it up here, then I'm okay.
Just a technical question.
Yes.
When I clicked on to accept it, mm-hmm. it had checked off on the right hand or left hand side all the different committees and all the different things on there. On
I
that
think
site.
You have to click on the little email icon. It's like a little envelope for just the ones that
I thought
you
if you
want.
Clicked on the top, it looked like
there
you
might
accept
want
all
be one
of
that
it.
Says accept all, right?
Mm-hmm. So I have to do it individually.
Each item
work
each
on
okay.
that.
I'll check
see
it.
How you're signed up. I can look at
okay.
the kind of scenes
right.
to see how
right.
signed up.
Okay. Thank you.
You know, the concern I have is
so.
That we talked about it on the county board, and we were going to do
I'm
it that way. But then we didn't follow through.
That's
okay. Me too.
Yeah.
I'm right with
you.
Yeah. Yeah. Eva told me that there's a number of supervisors that doesn't want.
I got one sitting up on my desk up there. I haven't used because they keep shutting out paper because they don't know who's good, who's on paperless and who's not.
Yeah. Well, we want to make sure you get the information that you need.
So
yeah.
when you put up this agenda,
mm-hmm.
do we have to go seek it out, or do you send us an email that we can just pop up the agenda?
You will get an email every time I publish the agenda, and you can click on the link right
and
from there.
And then it'll go
right
from the email,
mm-hmm.
and it'll pop up the
pop
agenda.
Up, right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
if you don't do it that way, you can get to it through the website.
Oh, no, I don't want to have to search
sign,
for
that's
it.
That's why you
no.
want to sign up to the agenda. You can sign up
it's
for
kind
it.
Of dumb.
Yeah, it's better if you sign up
don't
with
laugh
that email.
At me, Bob. I see you over there. I'm technologically challenged. No laughing over there. Okay,
I have
so
a lot
I can get
learning
there.
Too, but planning committee was kind of the pilot committee for these electronic agendas, so we've
so
had a
I
lot
can
more
call you and you can walk me
that.
Through it and we can
yep.
figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was an answer,
yeah, well, that's for another.
It's hard to teach an old dog.
All right, any
yeah.
other reports? Anything else? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to the next item. The minutes before you, August 14th and 19th.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion or changes? So Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
They're passed.
I was first.
Abstain.
All right, number six is a personnel resolution to appoint Richard Gossing to serve on the housing board. And Robert, would you like to?
This is a reappointment. The chairman, the information is in the back.
Yes.
Yeah, this is actually a reappointment, and Rich has been sitting in there for several years, and he does a very nice job.
Move to approve.
Second.
What's his attendance record? Good?
He's a good guy.
Missed, miss, or misses?
He has missed, but it was excused. Do you second that?
I second.
Discussion? The answer to the question is in the appointment, mm-hmm. Ron?
Hmm? It might have been, but.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Passes. And now we're going on to number seven, the review, discussion, and possible action on the city TIF disposal, proposal of shifting money between the various TIFs. And Dave, why don't you?
Well, we're actually on number seven, the second quarter human services, Mr. Chairman.
Did we do the resolution?
I'm looking at my agenda.
His agenda is different than the agenda I'm looking at. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And it's probably the computer.
Modifying the
right. Okay, we'll go back here. Thank you.
I was wondering how we got all the.
Actually, the new agenda says modification of the 2014 budget, human services, asthma grant. Is that you?
I thought I fell in favor there for a minute. No, I was wondering why I was sitting here. Sorry about that. I don't know how you got that. I came from.
The resolution before you is to accept for our Division of Health a funding of $75,500 from the state for actually for asthma control and prevention for our citizens. It's a 3-year grant, but there is a possible renewal of an additional 2 years, so it's $75,500 for each year of the grant. And it is to seek health outcomes for children and adults with asthma within our community. Kenosha County is the fourth highest for emergency department visits that are asthma related, and we're the third highest for hospitalization for asthma related illnesses. So the first year we will be partnering with Kenosha Unified and the Kenosha Community Health Center and the hospitals to gather data and to have them actually have patients who come in with asthma-related illnesses to sign off so that we can gather that data and begin to start the process of education within the schools, education at home, and in the community about asthma, and actually going into their home and working with environmental issues that they would have. So the first year is probably more data gathering and working with the hospitals and everything so that we can get release of that information to see just how many people.
Discussion? Well, let's deal with why we are so high on the list.
Yeah, what is the triggers? What are the triggers for these people who are ending up in the emergency rooms and the hospitalizations?
They look at the environment, like the power plant and
Chicago.
We should be, yes, we should be looking at that, but also home environments. Dust-related, cigarette smoking, that type of thing, what triggers it for those types of individuals.
All right, further discussion, Jeff?
So at that point, after you use...
Asthma.
No, no. Yeah, I'll join up.
First customer, huh?
Plus one.
So after your first gathering of data, is there a plan in place with which to move forward? I mean, are you going to just analyze the data and just go from there? Or, I mean, are you going to go into the schools, go into, I mean, is there any pre-planning done?
Yes, there's also, in the same time as we're gathering the data, is educational activities for both the schools and hospitals, for the staff, and that type of thing. So we're working in conjunction with the state.
Okay, thank you.
Further discussion? Is there a motion to
approve? Move to approve.
Second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Can we get a grant
that's good? Voice vote and budget modification.
This will be a two-thirds budget amendment.
Yeah. All right, we'll circulate this for approval. And then you have also, Lori, a second quarter report.
Thank you.
All right.
So we come in quarterly for the department, and the second quarter is included. And the third quarter I usually do during our budget hearings, so you can expect that next month when I'm before you. As you can see, our second quarter as a department through June, we have a levy surplus of just under $400,000, with the majority of that coming from Brookside, of about $320,000. And I made a note on the front of this that $320,000 is over and above their $785,000 that's already been in their budget to return. So it's probably going to be close to $1 million we're looking at for this year. And keep in mind, this is our year that we don't have the debt service. You know, so we're actually going about $300,000 more than over our debt service. For aging and disability services, I wanted to point out on page 2 and 3, they are showing a levy surplus this year, but I wanted to point out on page 2 how our institutes, the very first category, are showing over budget. As of April 1st, we have noticed that St. Luke's is getting filled with the voluntary admissions. You know, healthcare is more out there now. People have gotten healthcare, so Hospital St. Luke's is being filled up with more of the voluntary admissions. And our care center, which is approximately 11 beds, is being fully utilized. So anything for our chaptered or our involuntary placements are now being moved to institutes. It's our last resort. So you can see in the second category, our hospitals are showing an offset for that institute, high impact on the institutes. And but overall, they were able to, for all their mental health in AOTA, they showed additional levy needs of 153, but we've offset that with additional Medicaid revenue. So they're actually breaking even. That's for the first time in the second quarter. Another thing for juvenile placements, we are showing a possible deficit, and I say possible, of $101,000 at the end of the year. Usually our second quarter is always higher, and we work to get that down by the end of the year. So we are confident we'll show that that will be a break even for the juvenile placements. And on page 8 and 9, of the report is our levy, is our medical examiner statistics. We have 81 autopsies through June 30th, so we're, you know, double that for the end of the year. That's about 160, so, and that's how much we have budgeted, was 160 autopsies, so we're on budget for there. It's the other fees that we're not showing our revenue, we're just under a little bit through the first year. So our cremation fees and our other types of fees that they have services for the community. So we're showing just about $20,000 short on that revenue. You can see though that on page 9, our statistics, our manner of death, I'm sure you've seen the articles in the paper lately, our autopsy comparison manner of death. For homicides, we're already 3 this year to date through June, and we had 4 altogether last year. And our suicides are at 13 for a half a year. Altogether we had 22 last year. So we're still seeing that rise on suicides. And then we break apart the accidental death detail down below. And you can see the drug overdoses are continuing to still rise. and there's where there's really no rhyme or reason as to which age or whether it's male or female or economic. It's just the average is supposed to be a white male over 50 that are the suicides. That's the average, and that's nationwide.
White male over 50.
No joke, dude.
Is that what I heard?
Five.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the average nationwide. That's the statistic.
Really?
We're over the average.
A lot of people losing their jobs too. I mean, seriously,
and that's what started it. Oh wait, it
sure.
started going.
I mean, people got 25 years in a place, and all of a sudden they shut the place down, and they got their 50 years old, and they, what the hell am I gonna do with the rest of my life? So they decide they don't want to live it, I guess.
And then the last two pages are Brookside, so none of these are any different from the previous year. We're doing okay.
So basically, we're doing okay, huh?
Well, I thought we were doing okay.
All right, further discussion?
Move to receive and file the report.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 All right, thank you, Lori. Is Kathy?
Yeah, she just walked in.
Yeah.
Whatever. Oh, there she is.
Just walked in.
Do you know my last name?
Yes.
Catherine Andrea from Andrea Norndorf. And I'm going to present the audit.
Yeah.
And I think everyone's got an audit on there. Does anybody need an audit?
I do.
Should I have one?
That's it.
Yeah. There was a memo in your packet that said to bring your books because they're distributed.
I can bring some.
There was a memo in the email that I didn't open.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
No, it wasn't in the email. It was in the packet.
It was in the packet.
Yeah, it was in the paper packet.
It was right there. It couldn't have been more clear.
I know there was a more here.
Yeah.
You know,
Kathy will bring a couple extra so you
we just can't get our act together, can we?
Get it memorized already. You read this.
We'll share
what
happened.
I did.
And this is the management.
Yeah, we can share.
Here's the management communication report.
Do you need
them? I'll give it back to you when it's over.
Anyone
who
wants to keep this audit more
approved? Are we starting with the...
I have the management.
We'll start with the thick book.
Thick book. Yeah.
Does anyone else need a book? Does anyone else want a book?
You're going to need this one.
The management is...
Anybody?
Do you need a book?
No, hang on to that. Nope, that's the little one that we're going to go through.
Was that the audit report?
Oh, we're going through that one too?
Mm-hmm. Right behind you.
That one first.
Is this what we're handing out right now?
Are you saying you want it?
The audit report.
Yeah, we're going to read the whole thing.
Is that what we're handing out?
Popcorn.
So everybody have one that wants the audit?
Huh?
We're each going to take turns reading that.
Is that what it is?
Yep, there you go. It's on the screen.
All right, Kathy.
Okay, this is the 2013 audit report, it starts out with the first page that's numbered with the letterhead on it is our auditor's opinion page, and Shank is our auditor. They gave us a clean opinion, and included in this opinion, in this report, is we usually had two reports, one for our financials and one for compliance, but it's all in one report now. It's all done together. So this opinion says that we had a clean opinion, we had no findings, there were no issues with the audit. So that's why they put that's their opinion right there. The next section is called Management Discussion and Analysis, and that's the county's portion of this report, where we put in what happened during the year, describe some of the funds and what operations we have here at the county. So it's interesting that way. We also have some charts on page 8 and 9. I'd like you to open it to that. On page 8, there's some bullet points, and that describes What compared to last year, we increased and decreased in certain areas. These are things that you've been reported. These things have been reported to you when we talked about the closeout, but it describes to the reader different areas that increased or decreased in the government type and the business type areas. One of the biggest items, of course, is that we didn't, Human Services didn't run the W-2 and emergency assistance. That's now contracted to a private entity, and that was about $5.4 million. So the revenue and expense is not on our books anymore, so that makes the comparison look pretty funny there. And then the business type funds, which is highway, golf, and Brookside, that's the bottom two sections talks about the changes there. Highway revenue decreased $2 million. That was because there was some federal projects we had the year before, and those come, you know, every year. Sometimes we have federal projects, sometimes we don't, but the revenues, they pay for those expenses. So the revenues and expenses both decreased by $2 million. On page 9 are some charts that helps, gives you the picture of, in the top box, the yellow is our expenses in those areas of our general government, health, public works, which is just the depreciation of our roads, public safety, social services, education, recreation, which is our parks, and then conservation development, and then interest. The red bar is what revenues, not including levy, that those areas bring in. So there's fees, there's fines, fees, other charges for service that cover some of those expenses, and the difference is covered by tax levy. And then at the bottom chart is a pie chart that breaks out where our revenues come from. So we have property taxes that covers 42.9% of our revenues. Operating grants and contributions are 36%. Charges for service are 8.5%. So that's kind of the bigger. Now this is just the governmental type. When you turn the page to page 10.
Excuse me.
Yep.
What are contributions? What is the definition?
Capital grants, and it'd be a donation. Like we got the
just donated,
like the waste management and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's just okay.
Yeah.
So when we get charges for services, does that relate to the revenue you spoke of in the upper chart?
Yes.
I mean the revenue that we're bringing in for what we're doing.
Right.
Okay.
Charges for service would be any rent, which isn't that big, or fees for permits. Things like that.
Or the $30 million that are coming into Human Services, right?
Well, that would be operating grants and contributions. That would be in the 36%.
Carbon charges.
Okay, so see, that's not contributions then. Contributions, I thought you just told me, were like gifts.
There's contributions that are for operating, and there's contributions we get that are for capital. I don't think we got any, you know, we don't get contributions that often, but I know waste management, that's considered a contribution that they, that money they give us from the landfill.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there was a small contribution to fix the water thing at Pets 1 year. You know, we get contributions, but they're not that big. It's not every year.
So and that was the whole basis for my first question. The contributions is more or less what you're getting from the other departments that come in here to pay this, right? It's put in that pie chart.
Yes.
You just said the $30 million from, is that correct? Okay. All right.
Sure.
Yeah, but these aren't all grants.
Yeah, the federal inmate fees, that's in your
revenue.
Then on page 10 is the, shows that same, those same charts. Oh, I'm sorry, Dave.
Yeah. The question was for the drug forfeiture. They make a contribution to us, and that might get on here too.
Oh, drug forfeiture. I thought you meant the federal inmate money. I'm sorry.
The drug forfeiture.
Yes.
Is a contribution.
That's considered a contribution. Yes. And if it's for capital outlay, which the one amount was, then it would be in that 0.2% there.
That's okay. Good. Okay. Thank you.
On page 10 is the similar charts for Brookside Highway and Golf, and you can see.
Pretty good.
The expenses and the revenues.
Having a little bit
And then most of the revenues in the pie chart, most of the revenues are charges for service. In other words, golf fees, Brookside, they collect money to for people to stay there. And then the highway has some fees for service where they charge other municipalities for work. So that explains that. On page 11, the chart in the middle where the numbers are shows the history, the historical trend of our reserve that we put aside. And you can see in 2008, we had 8.3 million in the general fund reserve, unassigned reserve. And in 2013, we have 11.5. So there's quite a leap, and it dipped down in 2009, 2010, and now we're on the up. We're increasing our reserves that are available. And then the health insurance reserve is also shown in that. That's been kept steady through the years.
But we do that deliberately that way. We do the health insurance reserve.
The 1.5 is put aside.
That's something we just manipulate to get that 50.
Yeah, we make sure that we have that much.
I didn't mean manipulate, I meant, you know.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Then on page 14, you received a schedule when we did the closeout. It's very similar, but I wanted to point out again that it shows how the general fund started at 10.2 million in the beginning of the year. The items that caused it to increase are in the top section. Then there were some items that didn't fare as well as we thought they would. That's in the middle. And then we ended up with an unassigned fund balance, which means that is our fund balance that's available for operations or for whatever purpose. That shows the health of our general fund is at 11.5 million. And the county board set aside a guideline that we would want to be at 17% of our general fund expenditures. We're over that. At the end of 2013, we're at 20%, so we did better than the guideline there. 11.5 compared to 9.8, so we were 1.7 million over the 17%. It also goes on the bottom and says, if our tax delinquencies hadn't increased so much from the economy, if they would have stayed the same as in 2005, we would be at 28%. So that has affected our reserves quite a bit. On page 19, I want to point out that's a nice snapshot of our debt and over the years how it's changed. So the first, if you're looking at the bottom schedule there, our general obligation debt in 2008 was $80 million. It has increased with capital projects to $99 million. And then our OPEB, which is our retirement for benefits.
Post-retirement.
Yeah, post-retirement.
Other
I'm sorry, I couldn't think of it.
Which is mainly health insurance.
Health insurance. You can see we have protective debt. That's mainly the sheriff's department. And then the non-protective, those numbers, we've brought that down by changing our benefits and our policies for those benefits. So in 2008, we had a long-term liability of $132 million, and now that's down to $83 million because of the changes in benefits and things. So we've really decreased our debt on that. And then the vacation accrual, that's the bottom line. It was at $4 million five years ago. Right now, at the end of 2013, $109,000. Because of the change in those benefits, not being able to accumulate those things. So that's pretty much gonna go away after it's pretty much down there. So our debt has decreased. On the next page is the picture of the graph that represents that chart. So you can see the decrease over the years. On page 21 and 22, our financial statements that represent the county as if it were a for-profit. So in governmental accounting, normally you don't have your assets on the balance sheet, you don't have your long-term debt, Well, this puts, we record that in these two, we have a balance sheet and an income statement as if we were a for-profit entity. And so it shows the total assets of our government, and I'll show you a schedule later, the long-term liabilities, and shows you how we would look at that. I guess that gives an easier way to compare governments. And on the next page, on page 22, is the income statement. So in other words, it includes depreciation and interest. And if you look at the first column, if this is a little different, it shows the expenses in each of those categories. And then the next three columns are the revenues that are related to that. So for instance, general government, there was 22.6 expenses. And then there was these revenues to offset that, 2.7 in charges for service, 2 million operating grants, and 93,000 in capital grants. So the difference between the revenue and expense is that 17 million, and that's made up with levy and other some other grants. That's shown down at the bottom there where it says property taxes levy for general purpose. So there's, so it's a little different way of looking at it, and kind of shows you how you're covering your expenses and where you're using your levy. Really the same as that chart I showed you earlier. The next page on 23, I just want to point out in the general, the first column of numbers, the general fund, it shows, this is where the bond rating agencies will look. The very bottom line in the italics says unassigned, and we have 11.588. That's our unassigned, that's the health of our general fund. And the just above that, it says delinquent taxes under non-spendable. We have 7,856. That's the amount we had to pull out of our unreserves to set aside for, because we have delinquent taxes. And that affects, I was talking about that before, you know, when those go up, then our, it affects our fund balance. And when they go down, it'll increase our fund balance. The other statements here are show our income statement. There's a budget to actual on page 29 for the general fund, and none of the categories in the expenditures are over budget. People are monitoring that all during the year. Some of the revenues were a little below budget, but the main difference is those carryovers. We bring money over from the prior year, so it looks kind of like we had. That shows the general fund. And then the proprietary statements are page 31. This is the balance sheet for Brookside, Highway, and Golf. And those are accounted for as for-profit entities, so they have assets and liabilities. They have fixed assets and they have long-term liabilities. And then we have their income statements on the next page, page 32. You can see Brookside, Highway, and Golf. And then the very last column is our internal service funds, which is our health insurance, the job center building, liability, and workers' self-insured funds. Those are rolled up in one column, but in, at the end there's more detail for each fund. Then I want to skip, the next section is our financial notes and describes all our funds and how we account for things. I want to point out on page 57, talks about our deposits. And we have at the end of 2013, we have 27.9 million in cash. And those are the areas that the cash is sitting. And then on page 60 shows our investments. So we have money in AIM, Dana, at the Johnson Bank, and a little bit at the Kenosha Community Foundation, which is the Brookside Fund, and then the government pool. So this shows you where our money is at the end of the year, where it's placed. On page 63 is a picture, a schedule of our tax certificates. So these are our delinquent receivables. And you can see the different years we account for them by year. And of course, the more recent is bigger, and we're collecting most of our tax certificates are collected in almost to 99% by after 3 years. So we have a pretty good collection rate there.
Is Johnson Bank the bank you're using now?
Yes, we're still using Johnson Bank, yep. On page 64 and 65 are our capital assets. And this is where we track our buildings, our roads, our machinery and equipment. So if you want to get an idea of, there's a beginning balance, what we added, and then there was assets deleted, and then the ending balance. If you look, you can see the word infrastructure, it's $42 million in the beginning of the year, $44 million at the end. Those are represent our roads, our culverts, our bridges. So that's kind of a different thing where we keep track of that and what roads we replaced and what, you know, so that's a pretty big number that represents one of the bigger numbers in our assets. And then the buildings, of course, are $94 million. And then we depreciate those. On page 66 are the business type assets, which are related to Highway, Brookside, and Gulf. On page, starting on page 69, is the long-term debt schedule for the government and business type. And we already kind of talked about those. I just wanted to point out, you can see, you know, what we paid off. We had a refinancing in 2013, so we paid off a loan and refinanced at a lower interest rate and made some savings there. And this kind of gives you an idea of our debt. And we talked about that from the other section. So if you ever, you know, need a snapshot of where we sit, you can look at these pages, because it shows you going forward, like on page 71, it shows you in the future years what we're going to have to pay out in principal and interest for our debt. Other information included in these notes is our other post-employment benefits, and you can look at that. I'm not going to go through that right now. There's also the individual funds.
Okay. I couldn't hear.
On page 92, like I said, it's more detailed. Each fund, like we have capital projects funds. There's it identifies on page 94, for instance, we have different projects that are major. We set up its own fund, Parkland Development, Western County Communication, Energy Reduction. So you can see that we're tracking those larger projects. And then, as I said, this report includes our letters for compliance on page 106 and 108. Those are on letterhead again, and that's Shank, our auditor, saying that we complied with government auditing standards, and we also complied with the internal controls. So we had no findings in those areas either. So we don't have findings, no findings on the financials, and none on the compliance A133 single audit, which is spectacular, I'd say.
If you say so yourself.
Yes, if I say so myself. And then there's a schedule with tiny print, which I'm sure you'll all read when you go home. But that outlines or details all the grants we got, either federal or state, and tells how much, what area, what department, like Department of Agriculture, Housing and Urban Development. So this shows that the federal money that went through the county totaled $26 million. So we had $26 million in federal money going through, and we have for the state money is $18 million. So that's other funding that's coming through our county versus having tax levy pay for the programs that we have. Then I will go to the skinny report. Is there any questions on the audit?
Discussion?
Who audits the auditors?
Audit firms, every 3 years they have to have a peer review, and that's an outside CPA firm comes in and looks at their processes, their quality control, And their internal, they have to have inspections, I know, because we go through this every 3 years. They come in and they inspect, they take a sample of your work and all your work papers, and they check. And actually, Schenck had their peer review, and they picked Kenosha County as part of their sample because they told us about, you know, what happened. So that's how they're audited in a way. And plus, also, all these federal departments, they get these reports, and they go through them too, and then they send us a letter. They'll send us a letter after they get it and say that whether they accept your audit. So if they see things that are not correct, they'll either go to the auditor, depending on what the issue is, or come right to us and they would say something. We don't have that right now, but that's how it gets audited from the outside.
Just a ballpark number, how much does it cost the county to just do the bookkeeping numbers to get to the audit?
Do you mean just to put the audit
personnel and on a yearly basis? What do you think that just a ballpark number of what it costs the county?
You might have that.
Yeah, let me check that. Off the top of my head, I can't remember.
The thing about it,
you haven't got it at the top of your head.
No.
You know, it takes we. It's kind of like there's not exact cutoff because we're closing out the books, and that affects the audit, and then that, you know, so that time that we spend closing out the year and during the year, all the things we do to then compile this, it'd be hard to make that cutoff, but, you know, because we're working on it all year to make sure it comes
through. But I think if we're just looking at the cost of the audit, you know, what does it cost to generate the audit? I mean, we have hours contract on that for part of it.
The cost to provide service and to keep track of the numbers overall.
Oh.
Is a cost of doing business. Yeah. Is a separate entity. I'm just trying to put a number to that.
And then, like, the fact that we do the audit report, we have a lower audit fee because the county's doing their own report, mm-hmm. so the auditors lowered their fees for that.
Thank you.
This management communications is important for the board to see that the audit is really the county board's really the ones who hire our auditors. So they have to communicate directly with you through this document, and the first letter in this book communicates that. It kind of describes their responsibilities and our responsibilities, and they would tell you in here if there were any issues, if there were any disagreements with the auditors, between management and the auditors, or and their letter is clean as far as there were no issues. They didn't give us any findings, so that's the first section. On page 5. Is a management comment, which is not a finding, but a comment for improvement. And I think, Dave, do you want to talk about that, or do you want me to?
Well, it was one that was there last year, and it has to do with balancing cash. So last year, because we've been a little behind in balancing cash, it suggested that we create a procedure. So we created a procedure, but we're still a little behind in balancing cash. So it's something we need to work on.
And our management response to that is at the bottom. We right now the county is going through trying to implement a new tax billing software and receipt system that they're still working with the vendor on that. That I think will streamline some of our reconciliations. And then also we've been meeting with the departments between us and the treasurer and trying to get our procedures down and make sure everybody knows what they're supposed to be doing. So.
How soon will that system be up?
Do you know the timeline?
Excuse me?
For the system.
For the software?
Yeah.
I believe that they'll be finalizing the contract soon, like this month, and then implementation will start, and it should be by the by next year, we'll it'll be implemented over the summer, and then it'll be able to be used for the next billing when we do all the other municipalities' bills and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So
that's a long process.
Yeah, they're hoping to upload the data, and it's land info. It's not only tax billing; it's land information too. So all the parcels and all the information. So it's not just one area. So they have, because that's all connected. Each parcel is connected to the tax bill, and it all has to be uploaded and then checked and reconciled. And there'll be changes in procedures too, definitely, because this is going to be a more streamlined system.
It's similar to what we're doing in joint services with the software and the data conversion. It is a nightmare. I mean, it takes a lot of time and effort and resources to do that.
Any other problems you mentioned here?
No, that's it.
I have a question for you. One of my colleagues to my left asked me if when we talk about and pass who's going to do our audits, does that go to the board? I thought it did.
It's an RFP that goes out.
And then it ultimately goes to, right, okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion?
How are they?
All right, seeing none, does the committee wish to receive and file?
Yes, I'll make that motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you,
Catherine.
Dave and
that one. For the next item, I think we have a discussion of TIF.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
TIF.
What I am hoping, with the committee's indulgence, we have Mr. Clark here. I think most of you know him, but there's some new ones here. So this is Joseph Clark. He was chairman of the county board and chaired this committee for many years. And although he retired from the board, he wanted to come and give us some thoughts regarding TIF. And what I thought I would do, Joe, is just give the committee a little bit of background and distribute this document so they know a little bit about what's going on. And,
how did this get on our agenda to begin with?
I'll just take them. Well, I think there was a request from the committee.
When was that? I don't remember that.
I suggested that we discuss it.
Yeah, well, I said, I'm just saying this. You know what? Here's what I object to.
I don't.
We come to the meeting, we got nothing, and then all of a sudden it's on the agenda and we're supposed to start talking.
Actually, there were a number of papers with the agenda.
There were?
The TIF.
I didn't see
them. Yeah. There really
but
were.
But what did they what did they say? What's the issue here? That's what I want to know. But
okay.
Go ahead. Go ahead. But I don't want to see stuff on the agenda without getting anything. We should have had this.
Yeah, we did not have this, but there were some.
But this has happened more than once.
Explaining the issue of the TIF, I thought it was important for the Finance Committee.
It may be. I'm just saying.
Yeah. It's not. No, I think your comment is acceptable. And
sent separately.
I don't think we had. We did not have this, but there was some information on the included within the packet, which clearly indicated what the subject matter was going to be and kind of an explanation.
What the subject matter was, but what the problem is.
TIFs are in Wisconsin.
What the problem is. The problem is the city created a TIF and they're not paying them off fast enough, right?
Well, that's certainly part of it. The other part of it is that the county would be receiving more tax money if these TIFs were allowed to expire, and I thought that was an issue that was important for our consideration, budget time coming up very soon.
Okay.
So it is a problem that I think needs to be addressed. The third thing about it is that Dave does sit on the TIF review board. So ultimately, that board has the final vote on whether or not these TIFs will be allowed to expire or not, as the city is proposing. So, therefore, I think we do have a substantial interest here.
I didn't say we didn't.
Thus, it is on the agenda at my suggestion. So, Dave, go ahead.
Sure. So, I distributed this one-page document. In the far left column, you see the words donor and non-performing. There are three districts that are non-performing. Number four.
Can I interrupt? Because there are at least two students here who are interns, and maybe a few others aren't real clear what a TIP is. Perhaps you could define it first before you get into the problem.
So TIP is an economic development tool that the state of Wisconsin approved. It's in Chapter 66 of the state statutes. And what it does is it allows local government to create what's called the tax incremental finance district. So if they go through all the hoops and create that district, then the levy for all the jurisdictions stays in that district and funds expenses of that district. And usually what happens is the local government will create a business park, and they'll build roads, they'll put in utilities, they'll do other things that are necessary for a business to locate in the municipality. You see a big one in Pleasant Prairie. They have $500 million to $1 billion worth of TIF in Pleasant Prairie. Some of the Pleasant Prairie did dissolve one of their big TIFs, so that now is on our tax base. And it's there to absorb taxes for the whole county. So the entire county levy is a little over $300 million for all jurisdictions. And when our tax base grows, then
nobody gets
everyone's levy is lower. So the higher the tax base, the more the levy is distributed throughout the county.
So everybody loses a little bit until it's paid off.
So the city has 17 TIF districts, and one of the most recent things that you might remember hearing is that a company that we all know about called Amazon has come to the county and is located in the city. And we're going to fund the infrastructure there by creating a TIF district. That's all already been done. And so the city will sell bonds and use the money from the sale of the bonds to put the infrastructure in. And then instead, Amazon will pay about a mill rate of about $30 a thousand. But it's, and it's about 17% of that would go to the county, about 35% of that would go to the school, 40% of it would go to the city. But instead of any of those jurisdictions getting that money, it all stays in the TIF district and is used to pay the bonds that were issued to put the infrastructure in so Amazon could come to Kenosha. So I think that's like a 101 example of what happened.
And what about the time limit?
Well, it varies, but generally up to 27 years.
And that law was changed.
It was extended. So when the law was changed, there is one unique TIF in Kenosha. There was a special law adopted, and it kind of was tied to Chrysler moving out, and it allowed TIF 1 to last for 41 years, and then send its increments over to TIF 4. So there are exceptions to the 27-year rule.
Four is Harbor Park and the museums.
Right.
Okay.
So, quick question: do they set the time limit on the TIFs when they're created, or do they just use them until the money is paid up?
It's by state law. The longest is that the length of the TIF is prescribed by law. But the other thing the law says is once that TIF can be closed, it must be closed. So. Now there are exceptions that can happen, and here we're going to be talking about one of them, but that's the general rule. So for example, with Amazon, they want to close that in 2020, and I'm going to distribute another report after Joe talks so that you can see that. So Amazon, they're going to close that in less than 10 years, even though they could go out for 27 years. But so it's prescribed by law. But the law also says when they can close it, they must close it.
Right. One other point I think we could shed some light on. Did the law formally provide that money from TIP 1 couldn't be used for another TIP?
When they first created TIP 1.
Not TIP 1, but TIP's money formally. I don't think you could use money from a performing to a non-performing category. You couldn't shift, could you?
When they originally created the law, there was no such concept as the sharing or shifting. Okay. Then they amended the law in 1994, between 89 and 94. So the law gradually got amended where now throughout the state you're allowed to do the one performing kid can share with a non-performing.
All right, thank you.
Are there parameters for that?
There's requirements that common that the local government has to approve it, including the their governing body and the plan commission, and a joint review board has to approve it, which Terry mentioned earlier. That the law creates a thing called the joint review board. Five people generally sit on it. There's exceptions to that, but all the stakeholders that have skin in the game sit on that. So the school, Gateway, the county, one at-large member, and then the local government gets involved. So they have to go through those hoops and get approvals.
Is there a cap on the number of the TIFs? Is there? I read something about 10 or 12%. Yeah.
Right. So the TIF, the total TIF value can't exceed 12% of the total equalized value in the jurisdiction.
And we're at that now, or close?
Well, the city is at about 8 or 9%. But with the Amazon, it's going to boost them up close to 12 or even over.
So if these, some of these TIFs were allowed to expire, that wouldn't happen.
If some of the TIFs were allowed to expire, one of the advantages that would take some of the pressure off the city's case is that they need the cash flow. Their option would be to raise the levy to fund to pay off the bonds if didn't happen.
Do they have the authority to extend it by themselves?
No, they got to get a joint review board approved.
Okay, and who's on that?
Me. There's a guy named Pat Fenimore from the school. The city, Bonnie Tolme from Gateway, Frank Pacetti is chair of some of these committees. There's one committee for all 17, so there's one committee for each of the 17, so the makeup might be a little different. And some of the seats that were formerly filled might be vacant now because people have moved on and they haven't come in and filled the vacant seat.
So if it doesn't get extended, and I guess as a city taxpayer, I'm in for a tax increase.
That is the one thing that can happen.
I don't think I like that.
For these TIDs, I think Dan Przanski is for most of them.
Playing games with your money for a long time.
I wouldn't say that. The economy had something to do with it.
Well, yeah.
So, just to give you a nutshell of what's happening, you see the three non-performing districts. Those three non-performing districts, if they were allowed to, if they were not permitted to get these sharing increments, the combined highest negative balance would be close to $60 million. TID 4 would be the biggest one. That would go up to about $40 million, where they would be, that district would be in the red. So if they're proposing that TID 4 be allowed to share increments with 1 and 5. TID 7, the brass site, they're proposing that that 6 and 9, so the harbor site and McWhite, be allowed to share with that one. And the Wilson Heights is also non-performing. They're proposing 8 and 9. Surplus increments from 8 and 9 go to fund Wilson Heights. So,
what is the Wilson? I mean, what's in there?
Yeah. But Joel will talk about that. I'll let Joel talk about that. So,
what is the B?
That's where the Kennall is. That's part of the business park, and they call it B Business Park 1 and Business Park 2, but really there's only one business park. It's just kind of structured it that way. The city, the Common Council has approved this. The Plan Commission has approved this. It's been sent to the Joint Review Board, and they've scheduled a meeting for Wednesday where we would consider this, approve this, or take whatever action, whatever dispense with the request. And with that, that's now I think you're aware of what's where we are with this. And I'd like to turn it over to Joel, if that's okay with the chair. Joel.
One final question. There's five people that make the decision, yes. But if I read that right?
Right.
And you got they got one vote already with by the chairman of the committee, right? So we don't know where anybody's at right now, do we? We're talking about an unknown right now. Are they going to approve them or not? You know, that's the question.
Well,
we don't know that. I don't know. I'm just saying we're putting the cart ahead of the horse here because you guys make a decision whether whatever no matter what we say.
That's true. That is true. That's what the law prescribes.
So we're sitting here talking about something we have no control over, but it's okay by me if you want to talk about it.
So,
all right, Joe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for putting this on the agenda. And I guess want to maybe point out why I'm doing this. I mean, I've looked at, I used to audit TID districts. Watch this. I saw this in 2003 when they changed it. And there were some things that I didn't like. I didn't really care for the fact that they were extending periods, that they were allowed to expand without dropping properties off. But number one, I brought this up for public awareness. So whether we can act on it or not, the public needs to be aware of what's going on. And if you have an opportunity to review through some of the material they talk about, these review boards and who's on them and the lack of knowledge or the knowledge that's there and some of the mistakes that are being made. So it's really public awareness. In the last year being at a city planning commission hearing, I heard this talk about we're going to be pushing up against this 12% and we're going to miss the boat if another Amazon comes along. So it sounded then as if the only option was to go to the state and ask them to push it up to a higher number. So at that time, I went and did a little bit of research and started looking at all the TIF districts. And I was really shocked to find out that we have the oldest TIF in the state, TID number one from 1979, and it's generating between the two TIDs, one and five, it's generating about $4 million a year on projects that are paid off. So, but it's just public awareness. And the question that I asked then was, our only option isn't to have the state allow them to go up to a higher level. Our other option is to close these TIFs. And when you start a TIF district, they've always come in and said, okay, we're going to do this project. We're going to do the Amazon project, and it's going to generate all kinds of tax value. It's going to require all these government services as a result of it. And all the other governments are going to forego that. But we're going to do this project, and when it gets paid off, we're going to close it, and it's going to be a benefit for all the taxpayers. That's, in theory, the way TIF law started. So when they changed the law, they've allowed the governments to maybe take on more marginal TIF districts. And they talk about, you know, the opportunity cost. When you approve one TIF, you might have an opportunity cost of not being able to do another TIF. So you've only got so many marbles in the game, and their state is saying it's 12%. You've only got so many marbles there. Use them wisely rather than going up. And if you have the ability to go out and just keep pushing this thing up, it just makes it easier, or the local governments aren't going to think about opportunity cost and what the impact of these decisions are. Case in point, in 2003 or four, when they made this change and TID 1 got the grant, the special legislative exception by the state, 1 and 5, and maybe there's one more, to take them to 42 years, that was in 2004. And if you think about 2004, our economy was booming. We were doing very well from a development standpoint. my belief that the thought process was, if I can keep that money, I can build a museum. And there's an issue, you know, the law said, well, you can't build a fire station, you can't build a police department, so it's presumed that you can do anything else. There's tax incremental stuff for economic development, to create jobs, to create property value. A museum, I don't think, putting a museum down there when they had all the development going on down there, I don't know that it was the right idea, the right thing to do. But it compounds the problem that they have now. They used $14 million of TIF money that created no tax increment. And if you amortize that debt over 20 years at 4.5%, it's probably $900,000 more a year that we're paying, or it contributes to being upside down. But so number one, one of the things, the reason why I'm raising the issue is the state needs to look at how these TIFs are being used and what they're allowing. And while there may be instances where a 12%, going over the 12% may be warranted, I think there are instances where they aren't. And if you read through that material, they talk about one of the criteria for a TIF for the Joint Review Board is a but-for test. If we don't help them out to put the money forward to maybe clean up a brownfield, maybe no economic development would happen on that property. And it's the same thing here. What other alternatives do you have to that, other than just going to the state and saying we need to go up to 13 or 14 or 15%? And one of the alternatives that they have are they have these donor TIFs that could be closed. 1 in 5 have 2.55% of equalized value. There's two other ones that have about 1%. So that's, again, that's just something that I raised the issue with the state, and I asked the state to take a look at this issue, and the state is looking at this issue. They're just taking a complete look at the TIFs, and I thought it was important for the county to look at this. And as Dave said, if you closed, and he didn't say specifically, but if you close two of those TIF districts that are generating $4.1 million, Kenosha County would have a benefit of $728,000. City of Kenosha, $1.6 million would go to their general fund. And to your point, Supervisor Frederick, yes. I mean, the city would get money, but they're getting all the money, and it would be a cash flow problem. But it also says that if you make a bad TIF decision, sometimes the locals have to pay for that. I mean, those decisions. And I feel like the residents of Kenosha County are all paying for a museum. Someone asked about Wilson. You know, they talked about doing a subdivision or housing project there in 2004 when we were booming. You would have thought that they would have had a developer and everything locked down, and that was almost a certainty if you were going to go out and do bonding. The other big things that happened in Wilson are a transportation garage was built, and I believe that there were matching dollars that were used to build a transportation garage, which did not generate TIF increment, did not generate new tax base. In a stormwater project. So part of those being upside down on cash flow or having the problem today or being distressed is self-inflicted. And it's self-inflicted because we have laws that allow you to have these donor TIFs. And that's all I'm saying. I mean, maybe the solution is to allow them to stretch it out longer in those areas and where we can start closing these donor TIFs. Kenosha Unified School District, if they close these out, it's $1.4 million. You know, Gateway, the laws have changed how those technical colleges are going to be funded, and they weren't they're not the biggest part of our tax bill, but that was $230,000. I'm not sure what happens now, but I just wanted to point that out. So you know, I just the awareness, it's public awareness. Consider the alternatives and be aware of the alternatives. The state is looking at this, and I think the county, because the county is impacted, the county is providing services for these expanded areas. They should want to see them closed. They should look at this and they should have an opinion. They should have an opinion that they're maybe saying to the state as they review this, these are some of the things that we are concerned with, or these are some of the things that we would like to see. Wisconsin League, the county association may want to look at this. There are times when a TIF is, you have to do this, but I think there's a situation here where maybe you don't and you have other alternatives, and that's all I'm saying. So, and the final part is there is an opportunity for current tax relief. I want to make it very clear, I'm very supportive of TIFs. I think they are wonderful economic development tools, and I want to see the city of Kenosha, I want to see Pleasant Prairie to be in a position to have these projects come along. But we have to consider the opportunity cost. And finally, I want to make it real clear that this current administration in the city, they inherited this problem. This is not their problem. They did not, in my opinion, misuse the TIFs. They inherited it. They're trying to come up with a plan to resolve it. I don't totally disagree with them, but I think the state law should be changed. And who's to say, and I spoke with the mayor, you know, he wants to see these things wrapped up and closed out, and they have an aggressive plan to get them closed out, you know, by somewhere in the early 2023 or 2022, which is great. But who's to say he's not going to be here to 2022 or 2023, and who's to say the next guy that's going to come in may not have that theory? So we need to have some, have the state look at this and tighten this up, and that's why I'm doing this. So I'd be glad to answer any questions. I got to pick up my daughter at 8 o'clock at St. Joe's. I really appreciate having the opportunity to come in and at least present.
I was just laughing at what you were saying. I was laughing at what I read in the paper today, that the guy that created the problem is thinking about coming here for mayor again.
I didn't say who it was.
I did, because I remember this. I agree, the museum never should have been built. That Civil War museum never should have been built. I agree with that.
Have any TIF districts ever been closed?
In Kenosha County, the one district in Pleasant Prairie is closed.
No city districts ever.
No city districts.
And if the purpose of TIF is economic development, how is transportation garage that houses city buses fulfill that mission? It doesn't. I don't see it myself, but
except everybody wants.
If somebody thinks it does, I'd like to know how. And how is it that slips by? How does that slip by? I mean, how is that legal?
Part of it is governance. I mean, how it's governed. And that's something that the state is also looking at as well. I mean,
and they got a transportation garage down here to house the buses. They got a transportation garage out there by the Little League Park on 39th Avenue. You need how many garages do you need?
So,
and how does that fulfill the economic development? That's what I don't understand.
Is there any questions for me?
No, you did a good presentation. Thank you. So,
I
wasn't against the presentation.
Sure.
I just know that.
Thank you.
We don't
Joe,
have any control. It's a good explanation.
It's just my hope that you guys study this and understand this, and at least formulate an opinion, more of an opinion as to what the state should do, and understand the problem. This is not about trying to be critical of the city. I think there are other options that are better for the taxpayers.
This is something we can have some input on if you so choose. If you want to have some kind of resolution which specifically addresses whether Dave Gersten as a county representative should vote one way or the other and bring that to the board on Tuesday. The meeting is on Wednesday. I think that would certainly be appropriate. if you don't want to do that, that's up to you too. But I don't want you to think in leaving here that we have no control, it's out of our hands, can't do anything about it. If you want to exercise an opinion and exercise and express a voice, we certainly can. I would think we should, but you're the committee. Yes.
I think, you know, what I was hopeful is that the committee would get up to speed with this and understand what the issues are and discuss it and be in a position to communicate with the state and our legislatures as they're looking at this study what our feelings are. I mean, you can go through and say, hey, we don't like this, we don't like that. Currently, I don't know that rushing a resolution, trying to get a resolution to the county board is really going to do anything. But the city, if they want to go above 12%, does have to go to the state and does have to get approval. And the state needs to hear from the locals, they need to hear from the counties, they need to hear from the school districts, the ones that are also performing the services on these districts that should have been closed a long time ago, where the tax relief or the tax benefit or the reimbursement for all the costs that we're putting out there because of these districts are happening. So I think it's an education thing and potentially a communication to the state who's overseeing this, a communication or an action to the county association. That's what I think is the appropriate course.
Right.
Would you agree though that the 2008 dive and property values and stuff added to this?
I agree that the decrease in property values, but the whole city decreased in property values.
But they got hit downtown more than ever before.
They got hit more than anything, those condos. I agree with that 110%. And I just would point out that the TIF problem has been compounded by using TIF dollars for items that did not relate, go to job creation or the improvement of tax base.
I agree.
So, I would have to double check.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. All right, thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, discussion, Jeff?
I think...
You all done losing weight, Joe?
Yes. Go ahead. So I'm Bob. I want to introduce myself. You may or may need a few things. But I just want to say in front of this group that I will be upfront about having read the article and taking I was just in staunch opposition to your position, but having heard you explain the concerns that you just shared, I think his fears and concerns are valid and justified. It's worth mentioning that prior to becoming a professor of business, I was in new business development. I believe your background is in accounting, correct? Okay. So new business development and accounting rarely saw eye to eye on things, but he's taking a very conservative approach. A couple of key points. My arguments are that we do need to go to the state legislature and lift the threshold. I do take notice that in 2004, Mr. Clark shared with you a circumstance where I don't think he stopped short of saying it was abused, but there was you could call the question whether or not it was used for its purpose. I'm not interested in discussing what happened in 2004. What I want to make sure everybody understands is that the TIT program in Kenosha, 1979, I think was the first time we participated in it. We've invested $160 million-ish, and we've been able to see a $575 million return in that investment. And that includes the recession. It would have been north of $600 million. Had we not experienced the recession tail end of 2008 into 2009, the city lost about $77 million in equalized value. Point is that in 2004, and while his point is valid, that the economy was doing well, it was that view is a little bit too micro, because we're not competing with just Wisconsin. Amazon was competing with all 50 states. So whether or not our economy is doing well, there are other parts of the country still that are struggling, right? So you would understand that the games, the dynamics in the game have changed. So I'm not as concerned about the opportunity for abuse, although his point was relevant. It was not an invalid point.
I think that to rest your arguments from the position of let's go after the 2.55% is too one-dimensional, and the real issue at the point is far too complex for that. Kenosha County is rocking and rolling, and now is not the time to take away the you know, we want to fan the fire. We don't want to slow it down. So I would be on the opposite side of the tracks here saying, hey, state legislator, let's get something up to Scott Walk, to the governor. Let's move this along. Let's lift that cap, whatever, 2-3%. Because if Amazon, by the grace of God, Wisconsin caused that five foot of frost, we may actually squeeze another year out of this because the equalized value might save us that point. Every $50 million is approximately 1 point on that 12-point threshold based on our city's equalized value of $5.2 billion, right? So they're about $50 million behind schedule, I would say, in terms of possibly falling below that threshold. So we are going to butt up against it. And I think we need to lift that threshold.
So when do the non-performing, when do these performing tips then ever come off the... onto the general tax roll so that the general public benefits.
So, I distributed this report, and you can see that this is the schedule that the city has for these districts to go on the tax roll. And so you can see between 2019 and 2024, $661 million is forecast to go on the tax roll. And so that's the current plan. I'll talk about two things. One is the law. So there's a legislative council that was created by the state to review this TIF law. It's Chapter 66 TIF law. And because it's the most powerful economic development tool in the state, and because development happens at the local level by us taking risk. I mean, we took risk by a lot of the things we did, and the city took risk by a lot of the things they did. And sometimes the risk works out really well, and sometimes it doesn't. But we're the ones that are asked to take the risk. But because this is so valuable to us, it does need to be looked at, and it does need to be updated, and it does need to move along with time. So I'm really glad the state ledge council was created to review this. So for example, one thing that would give local governments more flexibility is if they could partially dissolve a district. What if it would make it more feasible for the city to put some of this tax base back on the tax roll? But if they were to do it, under the mill rate levy limit law, they would permanently lose the value that would provide to them under the levy limit. Not only would they not get it immediately, they would not get it when the TIF was dissolved, at whatever point that was dissolved. So there's many things that could be looked at to provide, to maintain good control, yet provide more flexibility at the local level so that the intent of the rule can be met, which is to spur development, help us move ahead. And I think we've all seen the statistics in Kenosha County. We are booming, but the state, not so much. So we're booming, but the whole state hopefully can improve as far as the development for the whole state. So so that's that. Now, as far as the request that the city has made, they've assembled a joint review board. We're meeting on Wednesday. I have made some requests to the city, and I want to say at this point, they either have complied with every request I've made for information or have agreed to comply with every request. So they've been accommodating and helpful and are attempting to provide the information we need in order to make this decision. So I think at this point, one more thing I'll say. The approach that the city takes in structuring this whole thing, and the approach that they took with this plan was to provide a sound plan that can reasonably retire the TIFs and get them back on the tax roll. And it's what I've always seen them do. But if there isn't enough coverage in the TIFs to cover the levy, that debt levy needs to go on city taxpayers' tax bill. So their approach is to try to reduce that as much as possible. So they try to structure this so both the goals are met. And that's what the plan that they put forth attempts to do. So, Ron, you saw that right away, that that's one of the key things that this plan does. And if the increment sharing is restricted, it could, maybe not next year, but at some point, impact the tax bill more than the level that the city would like, that the leadership of the city would like. So they can accommodate some level of levy. Let's say the levy goes up $1 million a year, they can still stay within their levy limit and not have a detrimental impact to the city residents. But if it goes up $5 million a year or $8 million a year, and they don't have the capacity to control that, that's that puts them in a bind. So that's what they're attempting to forestall getting to that point by doing this.
Is that one man, one vote thing? Each one gets equal vote, or what? Or is it parade?
Yep.
Or something?
Huh? Yep. The only time that's not the case is occasionally there's a overlapping school district, and the school district will get a partial vote. That's my second question.
All right. Further discussion?
I have a question about the statute. With most of the local governments, you can't make the statute less of what it is, but a local government can make it more of what it is. So you can make it stricter. You can put stricter parameters around what you're doing, as long as you're not making it less of what the intent of the law is. Is there any way for the governing body to do that?
So the governing body probably could adopt its own policy, just like we've done.
Right, and say it's not going to be used for museums. It's only going to be used for economic development and bringing jobs in.
I mean, we've done that. So, for example, our debt policy gives us 20% of what the state law permits. And I know that some local governments have policies. I'm not sure if the city has one, but they may themselves have one. They may have their own policy that they adopted. I'm just not sure. But I do know other cities in the state have their own internal policy on TIF.
But what about the governing body, the five people? Can they put a policy in place?
Okay. I'll talk about the jurisdiction of the five. It's limited. The Joint Review Board has a limited power, and it can only rule on three things. One is the but-for test that you heard talking about. Another one is the feasibility. So we have to look at the plan and say this plan is feasible, that the cash streams will offset the cost. The third thing we have to look at is overall, is it a net benefit or a net detriment? So we have to look at, will this plan overall provide a benefit to the community? So, and we get to take everything into account. We get to take all of the economies into account. So when Amazon comes, there's a lot more economic bang that we'll get than just the tax base. I'm not minimizing the tax base. But depending on the level of job, you'll get anywhere from a multiplier effect of 1.5 to as much as 3 times employment in a region. There will be sales tax, income taxes. There will be more tax base than just property tax. So if you do an overall global review, that benefit test gets to take all of that into account. So those are the three things that we will.
What are the done?
Well, I guess if those are the three things that you guys look at, then how did the museum get built?
Or the parking garage.
The, or the parking garage.
Well, the city got an opinion from bond council. They went to the state and said, you know, would the state like to review this and advise us whether it's in compliance with the section? And the state told the city, review it with your bond council. The city reviewed it with bond council, and the city's bond council was quarrels. And before the decision was made on the museum, the bond council, really their opinion was to the bondholders. And it said that the law says what you cannot do, and anything that, so you cannot do anything the law says you cannot do, but anything that it doesn't say you cannot do, you can do. So a museum is not in the list.
So
it's a legal list of what can be done, and if it's so if it's not on that list, then so it specifically says you can't do a city hall.
But isn't the purpose of a TIF economic development?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, so how does the museum or a bus garage fall into that category? It clearly doesn't.
The museum, they did have economic impact analysis for tourism
and
some gameplay. Now, the property that the museum was on had some restrictions, so I think it might have just been, I don't think you could build on it.
It had to be public.
So by putting something there, I could be wrong, I'm just going by memory because this was over a decade ago, but I think no matter what, that could not be tax base because it was in that Lake Michigan area that filled. So, but we were allowed to put some public improvements on it, so at least we could get some tax base and job growth from that. And they did provide that, and it all was feasible. And at the time those numbers were done, TID 4 showed that it would grow to a quarter billion or 300 million. And that was the rate of growth at that time.
What about the bus garage?
I don't think it directly funded the bus garage. The primary development that was done was to accommodate residential, and unfortunately that plan came in just before the Great Recession. So I can't remember if there were 50 or 100 units or however many, but only 10 or 15 units ended up getting built. So that development was put in for that, and it indirectly benefited like the drainage and that kind of thing indirectly benefited the transit center. But they did get grant money to fund that, and I don't think that tax increments from the TID district directly funded the construction.
So indirectly funded the...
By putting it, citing it there, they might have got some indirect benefit because of the drainage and the other infrastructure that was put in there, but it didn't directly fund the garage.
Any other discussion?
Just one other comment. It appears to me that from what I've listened to what you say, you might be working with the city to come up with a less harsh thing, that it would soften the blow a little bit? Or
well, what? There are, they have appeared before the Ledge Council at least twice. Hmm. And I think one of their appearances may be online on,
Wisconsin.gov.
It's Wisconsin I, I think. So, this Ledge Council business is, you could look at it online, I think. I haven't looked at it myself, but I've heard that they're recording of it. And I do think that the city has been before them. I think the mayor has been before them. I think the city administrator has been before them. I think, there's a state representative, Onstedt, is on that committee, and he was a former alderman, so he, I think, knows the city. But there's many others on that committee. Now's the time to look at this thing and make sure that this thing keeps working, because for us, we take the risk, and it's the number one tool we have to generate money. To fund development.
Bob, did you want to
just thank Mr. Chairman real quick? Yeah, Mr. Onstad is on the committee for sure. Verify that. Two, I'm the Vice Chairman of Kenosha Street Development Authority. I work closely with the Wilson Heights neighborhood. The transit garage, there's a comprehensive redevelopment plan out in the Wilson Heights neighborhood. So there's a variety of funding that occurred in and around that. And your comments are correct. Hucks Hole did not complete their development because they began right before the crash. And we're using our funding to acquire and raise the fourplexes over there. So there's a lot of sources coming into it. But that's not completely low-income housing, but it's income-based housing over there.
Further discussion? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to the balance of the agenda. Are the audits of the bills being circulated?
Let's circulate the bills. I'll start with the chair.
Okay, very good. And then do we have any reports?
I have a couple of reports to make.
All right, go ahead.
First, I'd like to pass out a draft of the general fund that was used, that I presented back in July to the rating agencies. I just want to give you an update. Starting next month, I'll give you monthly reports on the general fund, but this is one I used back in July. It basically shows that the general fund, our projection currently, which is conservative, is that the general fund will go up a little bit, and we should have no decrease in the general fund. The second report I have, pass out here, is a schedule of budget hearings.
For the dates?
Budget dates.
Okay.
We did have a little conflict this year where we normally do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. This year on the 21st.
Everybody
have a copy of this?
Everybody get our calendar?
No, I do not.
Here's one for you there.
Thank you.
Give them to it just in case.
This year there was a slight conflict with the county board meeting on the 21st, so I talked to the chairman. What we're going to do is do the 22nd, 23rd, and then come back on the Monday and Tuesday instead of just the Monday. Monday and then Tuesday if necessary.
Oh. Are these dates in conflict with anybody's schedule?
Probably.
Uncomfortable.
Well, we had a regular meeting probably Thursday.
Not that you care.
Yeah, I'll be out of town.
We want everybody here. Of course. Why should we have to sell through it alone?
The other point I want to make for those that haven't been in finance before is typically at 5 o'clock we have food available in the other conference room over here, so we usually have, you know, a light meal to eat before we
get into
the budget.
How about your schedule? Are you okay?
Right. So these times,
I don't know, yeah.
5
o'clock.
23rd.
5 o'clock.
Yes. See, that's a lot of fun. I find it interesting. Yeah.
Is there anybody else who has any date problems here?
They were not think
well.
So.
Yeah.
What do we do?
Anything else?
That's it.
All right, very good. Any other business?
No, sir. I just want to ask y'all, on the times on here, it's pretty much the same as last year, or do you adjust them at all?
Yeah, exactly.
Very little. If you read the top of it, I mean, they're there for information purposes.
Yeah.
We can take up things that are germane to the budget at any particular time.
Okay.
We do make the departments aware that, you know, they should be here right before their schedule in case we're ahead of schedule.
I think most of them know they're going to come
here
and sit around for a while.
Sometimes these things switch around. Occasionally, this has not gone out to the departments yet. But when it does go out, occasionally there's a conflict and we move somebody around between days.
Okay. Great. Any other business or discussion to come before the committee? Mm-hmm. Seeing none, the chair would entertain a motion to adjourn. And
second.
Is there a second? Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank
you for coming, and we are adjourned.
I'll let you have the folder.